Welcome. Again, if you heard me introduce at the last session, I was asked at every session to please mention about the Young Israel Summer Learning Program. Baruch Hashem, last year was a tremendous success, and they have excellent Magidei Shirim, who are top Talmidei Chachamim in their fields, and we look forward to hopefully having some of you, if not all of you, join us throughout the summer. The next speaker, Rabbi Shmuel Marcus, is going to be speaking about conveying confidence and self-pride and distinction. Rabbi Marcus, even though they gave me a bio, I could probably speak without the bio. Rabbi Marcus has been a Rebbe in Yeshiva University for over 10 years, and then he was drafted recently to be in Landers College. Rabbi Marcus is also the Rav of Ishei Yisrael, and I find it most apropos that he will be speaking about confidence and self, pride and distinction. And that's because I happen to know personally that Rabbi Marcus's connection to his Talmidim go through not only when they are his Talmidim during the present, but for many years to come. And he builds up their self-confidence and makes every single Talmud realize that they are different, they are unusual, they are distinct, and to use their kochas to the best of their ability. Without any further ado, Rabbi Marcus.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. I recall reading how Dr. Abraham Twersky, who has authored over the course of his career about 80 books, has on occasion noted that he emphasizes in almost the majority of them the importance of self-esteem, because he feels that that is so critical to the development of each and every individual, not just in one's success and career, but also in interpersonal relationships, and certainly in Avodas Hashem. And with your permission, I'd like to share just a few thoughts, suggestions, how perhaps we can convey and teach confidence, pride to our children, especially in their Avodas Hashem. To begin by offering perhaps a definition. I'm not a professional in psychology. There are those in this room that certainly are. But we'll use the definition of confidence as an accurate assessment of one's talents and strengths. When we speak of arrogance, cockiness, that's perhaps an exaggeration of one's abilities. Confidence, self-confidence, means an accurate assessment of one's own strengths and capabilities. There's a beautiful story told about Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, how before he had a pacemaker installed, he questioned his son-in-law, Rabbi Tendler, as to how it worked. He wanted to know if it would disqualify him from serving on the Sanhedrin. So perhaps, he wanted to ensure he would remain capable and qualified of serving on the Sanhedrin. Is that gaiva? Is that arrogance? Certainly not. He knew who he was. He knew he was the Posek Kador. He knew that if anybody is qualified in this country, in his generation, to serve on the Sanhedrin, it would be him. That's not arrogance. That's simply understanding what one's talents and abilities are. Another cute story related about Rabbi Chaskel Abramsky, who lived in London, England, 1940s, called to testify as an expert in Jewish law in a British court. He was asked, is it true, Rabbi Abramsky, that you are the foremost authority of halacha in London, England? He said, yes. The judge asked him, what about your humility, sir? He said, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm under oath. I have to be honest. So self-confidence means that you know exactly who you are, what your abilities are, what your talents are. Doesn't mean that you delude yourself into exaggerating or even underestimating your ability. And if so, how do we then convey that confidence to our children, confidence in themselves? Came across a very, very nice comment in a book by Drs. Marcy Fox and Leslie Sokol, who wrote the following. When you recognize that you matter and you have something valuable to contribute, then you have a sense of self-worth. Two very important points. When you recognize that you matter, number one, and number two, that you have something valuable to contribute, then you have a sense of self-worth. Amazing thought to ponder. Brings to mind a comment my grandfather, Brian Soloveitchik Zatzal, would quote often from Rav Kook Zatzal, Elokai ad shalono tsarti eini kedai. We say on the Yomim Noroim, on Yom Kippur, in Shemona Esrei, God, before I was created, I was worthless. What does that mean? Are we just hammering ourselves into the ground for no good reason? Ad shalono tsarti eini kedai, I was worthless before I was created? And if Cook explains that what we're saying is the following. Every Jew is put where he is put and when he is put for a specific reason. If I lived 100 years ago, I wouldn't be here because I wouldn't have what to contribute, what to offer. I'm put here and now because here is where and here is when I can contribute to Klal Yisrael, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokai, Ad Shelo Notzarti, before I was created, a century ago, 2 centuries ago, Eini Kedai, I wasn't worth because I didn't have what to offer then. I was put here and now because here is where I can make a difference. And then we sadly confess, in the spirit of Yom Kippur, V'achshav sh'no tzarti, but now that I have been created, ki'ilu lo notzarti. I haven't made the best of that. I haven't taken advantage of what I should be doing. I haven't made that contribution to Klal Yisrael as much as I should. But that same idea that a person matters, a person has something valuable to contribute. And one must never underestimate that I'm here and now for a reason. I have what to do. I have what to contribute. I came across a beautiful story by Warren, mentioned in a book by Warren Kozak, which is a biography of Rabbi Chaskel Besser, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, a book entitled The Rabbi of 84th Street. And Warren Kozak relates a story that Rabbi Besser was fond of retelling, how back in 1955, the height of the Cold War, there was a chess tournament. The national chess team of the U.S. was competing in Moscow against the national chess team of the Soviet Union. And the U.S. sent their chess prodigy, Sam Reshevsky, Jewish, Polish-born, Gera Chassid, turned U.S. chess champion. He was flying with the U.S. chess team to Moscow to compete. And so happened that the travel agent who was overseeing the flights and the visas to the Soviet Union was a Jewish fellow named Gabriel Reiner, who was born in the Soviet Union, immigrated years earlier to the U.S., and he commented how he had never been back to his hometown. So Rabbi Besser said, take advantage. You're making the travel arrangements. You're the travel agent. You can do it. Get a ticket. Get a visa for yourself. Go along with the team. Visit your hometown. Go back to the Soviet Union. Take advantage of the opportunity. So Sam Reshevsky somehow manages to apply for a visa, books a ticket with the U.S. national chess team, flies to Moscow. He's there in the summer, this time of year, for about a week or so with the chess team from the U.S. It's July 4th. And he's invited with the chess team to go to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow to celebrate Independence Day. And he's there feeling a little uncomfortable. Here I am. I don't really belong here. I'm a travel agent from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. National chess team from the U.S. is here. What do I do here? I don't belong here. He's about to leave. And the door buzzes and in walks Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev with high-ranking members of the Soviet Politburo. Slight problem. The U.S. ambassador was in Washington, D.C., the second in command was in a different room, and Khrushchev walks in, and all he sees are a bunch of chess players from the U.S. who don't speak Russian, who don't know what to do, and everyone just stares at him in silence. And Khrushchev, as you may recall, was not the most stable temperament. Anyone who bangs his shoe on the desk in the U.N. is obviously a colorful character. And he walks in there, no one welcomes him, no one brings him in. They just stare at him. He starts yelling in Russian at his ministers. Look at this. The Americans, rude people, no welcome. This is ridiculous. And Reiner, who's the only one who speaks Russian, is getting a little worried here. You have the second most powerful man in the world with a finger on the nuclear trigger. A little temperamental. Getting somewhat enraged. Not the best mix of circumstances. He looks around. There's no one there. No one speaks Russian. What are you supposed to do? Well, it's me or nobody. So he walks over, he says, welcome, Mr. Premier in Russian. So happy to see you. Please come in. Can I give you a drink? Travel agent, acting diplomat. So Khrushchev says, oh, you drink? So, yeah, I do. Great. They sit down for some shots of vodka. And as Rabbi Besser tells the story, 27 shots later, that's the number given. Khrushchev is still going strong. Reiner had the good sense to stop long ago. And now Krishna's getting warmed up. He's getting a little friendly. He says, tell me about your family. Where are you from? What does your family do? Oh, I have a son. What does he do? He's in the U.S. Army. Oh, where? He's in Berlin. Oh, boy. That was a mistake. Berlin? What's he doing in Berlin? What are the Americans doing in Berlin? He starts screaming and raging. Krishna starts getting all enraged. What are the Americans doing in Berlin? Get them out of there. They don't belong there. And Reiner, I guess, seeing that he had gotten Khrushchev a little more comfortable, says, Mr. Premier, I can solve all of the problems. You know, we Americans, the Americans don't know the common Russian citizen. They're afraid that you want war. I know, you know that you don't want war, but the Americans don't see the common Russian citizen. They have no visas, they can't come to visit, there's no tourism. I have an idea. Open the doors, allow Americans to come tour in Russia, visit Russia. You'll take in millions of American dollars in the tourist industry. They'll see each other on the street. They'll get to know each other. You'll warm relations between two countries. So Krishna says, great idea. He calls over Mikoyan, one of his economic advisors, Anastas Mikoyan. He says, Mikoyan, this man is from now on in charge of issuing all visas to the Soviet Union from America. Okay, he's a little drunk. Didn't think it meant much, Reiner. He goes home. The next day in his hotel, sure enough, a knock on his hotel door. In walks a Soviet government official, three lawyers, drew up a contract. He was given a monopoly on issuing all visas to the Soviet Union from America for the next year. Struck it rich. He comes back home. State Department starts calling him. We got to speak to you. What did you tell Khrushchev? How did you pull this off? What happened? And all of a sudden, a Jewish travel agent, Upper West Side, is diplomat par excellence. He is dealing in international intrigue. He's warming relations in two superpowers in the middle of a Cold War. All because why? Because a guy who spoke Russian was in the American embassy in Moscow at the right time, the right place, and he figured, I can do this. There's no one else here, so I might as well make my contribution. It's a beautiful lesson in seeing yourself where you are when you are, because you're the person who's supposed to be there. I have what to offer. Don't ever underestimate your abilities. Brings to mind a beautiful comment of the Ramban al Torah in Parshas Vayakhel. The Ramban asks, he says, it's astounding. The Jews in the desert, they have the ability to fashion all of this incredible tapestry in the Mishkan and the incredible artwork in the Mishkan and the gold and the silver. How did they figure this out? Where did they get this training from? Cairo College of Carpentry didn't exist. Where'd they come from? How did they know all of the skills and all of this incredible technical talent? Where'd they get it from? The Ramban says, because these Jews, matza betivo sheyuchal lasos kein, they sensed that they had the innate talent to do this. They sensed, I have this skill, I have this ability. No training, no education in regard to fashioning the clay HaMishkan, but this individual sensed, I think I can do this. I think I know how. I have that chush, I have that skill, I have that ability. Then Ramban writes, Vayig baliba b'darkei Hashem. He had the confidence. If I think I can, then I'll succeed in doing it. If I'm doing l'shem shemaim b'darkei Hashem, vayig balibo. I know I can do it. I bet I can do it. Just the sensing that I have an ability. I'm here. I'm in this place right now for this reason. I bet I can do it. Vayig baliba b'darkei Hashem. A confidence that comes from recognizing I have something to offer, something to contribute. I often think of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal's beautiful understanding of Megillas Esther, which is such a beautiful lesson to this point. He describes how, if you look at the Megillah, Megillas Esther, Perek Beis, Perek Gimel, and Esther is introduced to us as a woman who has really no initiative. If you read the Pesukim carefully, in Perek Beis and Perek Gimel, all you hear about Esther Hamalka is, Ve'es ma'amar Mordechai Esther Osa. She did what Mordechai told her to do. When she was taken to the Beis Hanoshim, to the harem, waiting for her night with Achashverosh. So lo biksha dabar, she didn't ask for anything. Whatever Haggai told her, you gotta wear this perfume, okay, that she took. But she had no initiative of her own to request this, to request that. She was cared for by Mordechai, he raised her, and even after she was in the palace, whatever Mordechai told her to do, that's what she did. Passive, seemingly lacking initiative, just doing as she's told. Yet at the end of the Megillah, my goodness, she is a brilliant tactician, strategist, political wheeler dealer. She is spinning political intrigue. She is hashing strategy, Haman, Achashverosh, jealousy, competition. Unbelievable. Taking initiative, ordering the writing of the Megillah and the establishment of Purim holiday. What happened to her? And Avraham listens and explains, it's all in Perek Dalet, where Mordechai confronts her and tells her, why do you think you're here? You're in the palace for a reason. Because you have the ability, you now have the position, the opportunity to act for Klal Yisrael. You might doubt yourself and your ability. Perhaps you, until this point, were lacking faith in yourself, but you're here and now for a reason. Take advantage of your ability. Recognize that you're here for a reason. The self-confidence that's built as a result of recognizing, I have what to offer, I'm put here for a reason. Beautiful, beautiful lesson. And the same way Mordechai tells Esther, "Umi yodem leis kozos higat l'malchus." You are in a position of power for a reason. We Klal Yisrael are all mamlachas kohanim. We're all given that royal position. We're in a position to inspire, to influence, to demonstrate, to role model for others. But to recognize that we're here at a time and in a place with certain talents that can be used properly, l'shem shemayim. To recognize that we matter, we have something to contribute. And that doesn't have to be necessarily only in regard to achievements and accomplishments. It can be with regard as well to interpersonal contributions in relationships with people. Even if someone perhaps isn't the best at achieving in a career, professional, business sense of the word, but interpersonally, making an impact on people in relationships, that's also a source of self-confidence and self-esteem. It's a beautiful story that's told by Shlomo Kalbach, famous, well-known story, how he was walking in Tel Aviv once, visiting Israel, comes across a street cleaner. A Jew bent over, sweeping the streets. He starts speaking with him, asking him where he's from. I come from Piasetzna. Piasetzna, why? You know the Halakha Piasetzna Rebbe? Calling him as Kalman Shapiro. He says, of course I know him. I studied in his yeshiva. Tell me a teaching. Tell me something you learned from him. And he described how the Piasetzna Rebbe would always emphasize to his Talmidim, to his students, the greatest zachen develop, the greatest thing you can do is to tana tova for yenim. Do a favor for somebody else. That's how you make a difference in the world. Do a favor for somebody else. He wasn't focused on career achievements, on professional success. Make a difference in someone's life. That was the lesson he hammered home all the time. And the street cleaner, Shlomo Kalbach, relayed the story, described how when he was incarcerated in the concentration camps during the war, what kept him going was, I can make a difference in somebody else's life. I can give chizik to somebody else. I can perhaps inspire someone else to last another day, to keep on fighting for another week. To tana tova for yanim, do a tova for somebody else. That gave him chizik. That gave him the will to live on, because I can make it easier for somebody else as well. And to find purpose and meaning in my ability to make a difference in someone else's life. Also, a tremendous source of self-confidence. Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin writes in his Hakdama to his father, Chaim Volozhin, his Nefesh HaChaim, amazing, amazing line. He says, "V'kohayu devarav elai tamid." My father, Chaim of Volozhin, used to tell me all the time. So he's about to tell us the one lesson his father, who was the Vilna Gaon's premier student, would relay to his son again and again and again. "V'kohayu devarav elai tamid. Lo nivra ha'adam ela lahoa la'acharini." Man's purpose in creation is only to help somebody else. Kizek Kohadim, that's everything. It's amazing. Chaim of Volozhin, the Vilna Gaon's prize Talmud. You think all about Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah, to the exclusion of everything else. And the one lesson he's emphasizing to his son time and again, Bekohayu Devar of Eli Talmud, is Lo Nivra Ha'adam El Loho La'acharini. Help somebody else. Give someone else a good feeling. Do a chesed to somebody else. Again, a source of self-confidence when I recognize that I matter, that I have something to contribute, not just in the achievement realm, but in someone's personal life. I can make a difference in someone else's life. To convey this importance of each and every individual, how you can contribute, how you matter, makes a tremendous difference in somebody's perception of self. And perhaps self-confidence also stems not just from recognizing that I matter, I have what to contribute, but self-confidence and pride stems from recognition that we have a distinction. As Bnei Bechor Yisrael, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu's firstborn son. I read recently a beautiful, passionately written speech given by the Nesiv HaShalom, the Slonim Rebbe Zatzal, just during the Six-Day War, after Shechur Yerushalayim. The Slonim Rebbe, who built his yeshiva, as you perhaps know, just minutes from the old city. He gave a talk to his chassidim right after Shechur Yerushalayim, 1967. It was still during the war. And he highlighted the following. He said, it's not just the incredible military victory, the unbelievable, miraculous military victory that we've been zocha to see in the past few days that we're so excited about and thankful for, but it's that we're also thankful for the unbelievably open display of God's love for us, God's affection for us, that God would do this for us. It's such a beautiful display of God's love for us. If a Jew recognizes that I have that distinction, that special relationship, that dveikus of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, look what he's doing for me. Look how God has taken care of me and watching over me. Or think about the upcoming 40th anniversary of the Entebbe rescue in the same terms. Unbelievable military feat of accomplishment. But look how miraculous it was. Look how Kadosh Baruch Hu is expressing his love for Klal Yisrael. To feel that sense of pride that I am the recipient of that relationship and that love of a Kadosh Baruch Hu also gives one a certain sense of self-confidence. I remember as a little kid growing up in my father's shul. My father was the rav of the shul. And every so often he'd give me a little errand to do. Go downstairs, get me that safer, this safer. And he'd give me the keys, the master key to the shul. Oh boy, was that an ego booster. A little kid walking through the shul, the master keys. Every door I can unlock. The kitchen with the cookies, the shul office. Didn't make a difference. Had it all. I was a little kid, but I remember feeling so inflated. Here I am, a little kid with the keys to the entire shul in my hand. It was the relationship of B'nai B'chor Yisrael that I was boosted by. That I was blessed to be born into this position of, in my own little kid world, power or distinction. But we're all that B'nai B'chor Yisrael. We all have that distinction, that sense of pride, that we have that relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it's that pride that should also give us a sense of confidence. When one has confidence and pride, you're capable of withstanding the stares or the sneers of others. That also is so important, to have the confidence and pride to live as a Jew openly in the big wide world out there. If you have that sense of pride and confidence in what I do, then you're capable of doing it in public. I remember once I was at Chasna of a Talmud in Chicago, and I was sitting at the rabbi's table, looked around, a bunch of guys with beards, except for one fellow, clean shaven, looked like a bodybuilder, really in good shape. I said, wow, that's interesting sight at a rabbi's table, really looks very, very fit. And I started schmoozing with him, asked him, you know, where are you from, what's your name? And sure enough, turns out he was a Navy aircraft pilot, flying on and off aircraft carriers, eventually became a Baal Tshuva and a Navy chaplain, a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy. Fascinating story to tell. And I asked him, you know, give me some stories from your experiences in the U.S. Navy. He told me the following, and I'll end with this. He was in contact with another Navy pilot based in Okinawa who became a Baal Tshuva. And this pilot, when he became frum, asked his commanding officer, please don't fly me on Saturdays. Okay? Religious observance, the commander agreed. He didn't fly on Saturdays. And boy, did he get it. All the other pilots, oh, you're so holy, you're so religious, we have to fly, you can't fly. They would make fun of him, they would bother him, they would hassle him. And he stood strong. But this is what I believe in, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And the good-natured teasing continued until one Shabbos, there was a meeting off base, a few miles off base. And it was pouring, and it was cold outside, it was miserable. And everyone's driving to the meeting, and they offer him a ride as they pass him. Come on in, we'll give you a lift. I'm sorry, it's the Sabbath, I can't drive. And one after another, they pass him, offer him rides, turns them all down. He gets there after everyone else. He said when he walked in, his boots, every step he took, you'd hear the water squishing in and out of his boots. It was soaked to the bone. He said from that day on, when they saw that he was willing to proudly stand up for what he confidently believed in, all of a sudden they stopped bothering him. Never again did they tease him. And instead, they started challenging the other Jewish but not yet frum pilots, how come you fly on Saturdays? He doesn't fly on Saturdays. So when you have that pride and confidence to stand up in the face of others and the sneers and the jeers, but to stand up for what you believe is correct and know is correct, that self-confidence, that pride, earns you the respect of everyone else. I wish all be zolcha for that in our own lives and communicating that to others. Thank you so much.